There you go. See, I feel much more encouraged now. Let's take out our Bibles and turn over to the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 12. In Hebrews 12, we're going to pick up here in verse 1. The Hebrew writer has just finished in chapter 11. He's been sharing about the men of faith, great faith. And in some ways, it's like the hall of fame of faith in chapter 11. And then he goes on to chapter 12. He says in verse 1, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." You know, it's amazing how our attitude and our behavior can change depending on who's watching. You know, just the other day I was out visiting some friends who were on holiday, and my wife and I, we took our kids up to Cambridgeshire, where there was another family from the east who was staying in a caravan on their holiday. And we went up there, and we took a frisbee, and we were playing frisbee together, and we were playing football together. But the couple is Paul and Jemima Rowden. I remember we used to all be in the campus ministry together some 20 years ago. And I remember even as we were throwing the frisbee to one another, I had these flashbacks of 20 years ago of when we used to do exactly the same thing. And I said to Shemaine, "Do you remember how we used to play frisbee together?" She said, "Yeah, I remember." And it was all coming back. And I remember, and there was my wife Julie with, I was throwing frisbee to her, she's throwing it back. And I remember at a student ministry 20 years ago when I first started liking Julie. I remember when she would come along and we'd be out in the park playing frisbee, and knowing that she was watching me made a huge difference to the way I played. Because now all of a sudden I would have that extra little bit of energy to go for the frisbee disc. When, you know, normally if she wasn't there, I'd just let someone else go for it. But when she was watching, I would jump those extra few inches higher. I'd run that little bit faster. And you know, when you know someone is watching you, it makes a difference. It's great to have the brothers and sisters from Kiev with us. I noticed you got a video in the message. What is it? Is it morning? Dobro utro. Здравствуйте, как дела? Dobro pozdravat. And just because I'm being watched, and they're going to show this back in Kiev. But you know, when you know someone's watching, it makes a difference. And right here he says, remember, he says, look, we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. We've got all these people, men and women of faith, who have gone before us. And then he says in verse 2, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. You know, I've got 3 points this morning. First point is the focus. The focus is we need to fix our eyes on Jesus. The Bible says he's the author, he's the beginning, and he's the perfecter. The Greek word toteles. He's the completer of our faith. You know, as we live our Christian lives, we've got to understand that it's our faith is dependent from start to finish on what Jesus did for us on the cross. When Jesus died on the cross, he is the one who completes our faith. You know, in Galatians 2:20, we know the verse, Paul says, I've been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and who died for me. You know, and he says those words in the middle of some very challenging words to the church in Galatia, because the problem is that they were going back to legalism. They were drifting back to a works mentality. And he was saying, you know, and you can look in chapter 3 of Galatians where he talks about how, you know, after the beginning of the Spirit, are you now going back to those old principles? He's saying that it's not about salvation by works. He talks about how some people have come into the church and were trying to pervert the gospel. They were saying that in order to be a Christian, you had to become a Jew first, or you had to be circumcised first. And so somehow your salvation was dependent on the works of man as well as on the work of God. And Paul was saying, no, that's not the case. He says, we've been crucified with Christ. It's through Christ that we live. And we've got to understand that being crucified with Christ means that we come to Jesus totally dependent on Him for our salvation. You know, in Romans chapter 6, he says a very similar thing over there. And flip over to Romans 6. Talking about those who have become Christians. And we know the verse in verse 3 and 4 where he talks about we've been baptized with Christ. But he says there in verse 4, we were therefore buried with Him through baptism into death. In order that just as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, we too may live a new life. If we have been united with Him like this in His death, we will certainly also be united with Him in His resurrection. For we know that our old self was crucified with Him, so that the body of sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves to sin. That we've been crucified with Christ. And you've got to understand there's two things we've got to take away from that. One is that our salvation was dependent on the cross. It's not about our own good works, either before or after baptism. But we are saved by grace. That means that even as Christians, when we stumble, when we fall short, when we mess up, we can still be saved because it doesn't depend on us. It depends on Jesus and His sacrifice. That's good news. But the second thing is, we've been crucified with Christ so that the body of sin might be done away with. In that same pattern, in Galatians, when he talks about we've been crucified with Christ, he goes on to say in chapter 5 that those who've been crucified with Christ, we've crucified our sinful nature. Along with all the acts of the sinful nature. So being crucified with Christ means that we turn away from sin. That we don't indulge in it any longer. And the reason we turn away is not so we can make it to heaven, because no, that work has been done by Jesus. The reason we turn away is because Jesus died for us. He paid the price for us. 1 Peter 2, and verse 24, he talks about that He Himself bore our sins in His body on the tree so that we might do what? Die to sins and live for righteousness. So the first point is the focus. The focus has got to be the cross. Go back to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. He says we've got to fix our eyes on Jesus, verse 2, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before Him endured the cross, scorned its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider Him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You know, the cross, we take the communion every week to remind us of Jesus' death. To remind us of what has been done for us. But you know, the reason why we do that every week is because it's so easy to forget. It's so easy to get into just the routine, even as Marvin and Therese were sharing earlier, that we can get comfortable. But we need to remember what it cost Jesus. I want to show you this video clip. It's just some clips taken from the movie The Passion. And if you've not seen that, they're trying to depict the cross. Some of the scenes are quite graphic, but I believe the real event was actually a lot worse than what we're seeing now. Let's have a reminder.
my Bible to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We've got to remember the focus, and that's Jesus Christ dying for us. And because he died, that's our motivation for why we live our Christian lives. But in 1 Corinthians 9, let's pick up here in verse 24. Paul says, "Do you not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. I do not fight like a man beating the air. No, I beat my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize." You know, the audience that Paul was writing to here in Corinth, they would have been very familiar with the games, because they used to have the Corinthian games every 4 years or so. It's like a precursor to the Olympic Games. But he says, when you compete in those games, only one person gets the prize. And you have got to compete in such a way as to get the prize. That means when you run, you don't run aimlessly. He says, when you train for a fight, you're not beating the air like a man shadow boxing. But instead, you are focused. You are focused and you're in it with all your heart. You know, we've got the Olympics come up next year. And if you come in the top three, you get a podium finish. You get to stand on the podium and they give you a medal. In those days, it wasn't a medal. They'd get like a laurel wreath. If you won the race, you get a laurel wreath. It wasn't worth very much, but they stick it on your head. But if you lost the race, then you would suffer. Some losers, they'd get their eyes gouged out. In the boxing matches, they would wear gloves on. It'd be like bandages and stuff. But on these gloves, they would have lead weights on the outside. And so, if you're training for one of those fights, trust me, you don't take your training lightly, because you know, gosh, this is going to be intense. And so you're working hard. This is the kind of fight that Paul talks about. He says, you don't fight like a man beating the air. He says, I beat my body, I make it my slave, I do whatever I need to do. Recently, I started going back to the gym just a couple months ago, because I want to make sure that I would stay in shape as I get older. Marvin and I, we were born just 11 days apart, is that right? Something like that. And he talked about being in the Middle Ages. I feel like I was born in the Middle Ages. But you know, as you get older and your body runs down, you've got to make sure, you've got to work harder to stay in shape. You've got to work harder to stay in shape. And so I went to the gym and I'm just trying to get back in shape and everything. And you know, I used to work out a few years ago. When you've not been to the gym for a while, you lose a little bit of strength. And you lose a bit of muscle tone. And so, knowing this was the case, I decided, okay, let me just start off slowly and build up gradually. I won't go in there with too high an expectation, otherwise I might go away discouraged. And so I started in there, and I thought I'd do some squats. And you know, squats are actually good all-round muscle building, because it works your legs, and that those are the biggest muscles in your body. And so I thought, okay, let me just do some squats. And on the bar, I had 20 kilograms on each side, so it's like 40 kgs. Not a lot, but it was enough. It was heavy enough. And I got under the bar, and I lifted these things up, and it was a lot heavier than I realized. Trust me, I've been used to doing like 80 and 100. And here I thought, man, this is unbelievable. And as I stood up, I kind of stumbled a little bit, lost my balance, and I started to lean over a little bit. The problem is I'd forgotten to put the little clamps at the end to stop the weights from moving around. And so then as I was a little bit unbalanced, unsteady, one of the weights began to slide off the barbell. And I could see it going, but there was nothing I could do about it. And I was tilting, and it was sliding. The more it moved over, the more I kept tilting, and it slid off the end and fell on the ground with a crash. And in the gym, as this weight fell and hit the ground, everyone who's there, all of a sudden, they look up, like, what is going on? They look at me. And so there I am, with the weight on the ground, tilted over like this, and they're all looking at me. And then this weight, because it's now imbalanced, I started to tilt the other way. And all eyes were already on me, like what is going on? And, tilt, and the other weight fell off as well. And so I left there standing with just a barbell on. And everyone in the gym, they're like, what is up with this guy? You know, when you're striving, when you are working hard for a focus or a goal, it takes effort. And Paul says, you've got to work hard at it. He says, he even talks about, I beat my own body and make mistakes so that after I've preached others, I myself will not be disqualified from the prize. He says, you've got to run the race. You've got to run with a passion, run to get the prize. Look over in 1 Timothy. In 1 Timothy chapter 6. He talks about fighting the good fight. He used that phrase a number of times in the letters of Timothy. This is one of them. In 1 Timothy 6, he talks about in verse 6, godliness of contentment is great gain. We brought nothing into the world. We take nothing out of it. In verse 8, if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. In verse 9, people who want to get rich fall into temptation and the trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. But you, man of God, flee from all this and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. Fight the good fight of the faith. Take hold of eternal life to which you are called when you made your good confession in the presence of many witnesses. He says, you've got to fight the good fight of the faith. He says, flee from the things that the rest of the world runs after. The world runs after material possessions and money and wealth and all of those things. But you've got to run away from that. You've got to fight the good fight. And you know, when he talks about the word good, his hearers, you know, there are two words for good in the Greek. There is the good which comes from the inside, it means intrinsically good. Same word that is used in Romans chapter 5 and verse 7. You know where he talks about how for a good man some might possibly dare to die. Very rarely will a man, will someone die for a righteous man, but for a good man they might. You think, well, what's the difference between those two? If someone's righteous means they're just doing the right things, doesn't necessarily mean that they're good on the inside. But he says, for a good man, so might possibly be there. I mean, good from the inside. But that's not the word that's used here. This word for good is mean good, meaning from as viewed from the outside. It's, if you're looking at a fight and it's a good fight, it doesn't mean you've been successful, whether you win or lose. It's rather the technique. It's rather the effort. It's rather the way you conduct yourself. It's someone who if they're running a good race, it means that they've really given their heart and they're running with excellent technique and they're really doing their best to finish regardless of whether or not they win or not. He says it's not a good or evil type of thing, but it's rather the fight. The good fight is you live out your Christian life in a way that others can look at with admiration. He says the same thing back in 1 Timothy 1 and verse 18, talks to Timothy about fighting the good fight. Look over in 2 Timothy chapter 4. In 2 Timothy 4. And this is the passage that Franklin was using earlier. But he, having said in verse 2, preach the word, be prepared in season and out of season, he skips down to verse 6. And Paul says, I'm already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time has come for my departure. I have fought the good fight. I've finished the race. I've kept the faith. You know, we all want to be able to say we fought a good fight. We all want to say, you know what? I gave my best. And a good example of this, do you remember in the Olympics back in 1992, there's a runner who represented Great Britain by the name of Derek Redmond. He was a favourite to win a medal, I think it was like in the 400 metre relay, right? He was a favourite to win a medal in the 400 metres. And in the semi-final, he was, you know, he had posted some really great times that year. He was running at his peak. But he always kind of been prone to injury throughout his career. And here he was at the pinnacle of competitions in the Olympic Games. And in the semi-finals, what happened was he was one of Britain's few hopes for a gold medal. During his race, he pulled up short with a hamstring injury. And his race was over after all those years of training. And after all the runners were in, they sped ahead, and there was nothing he can do. He knelt on the ground, and he was just in agony. But he got up and decided, you know what, I'm going to finish the race. And anyone who's suffered a hamstring injury, you know, even to walk, let alone try to run, it's exquisite pain. But you saw him struggling to finish the course. And then his dad was watching from the stands. His dad comes down out the stands, and he comes down and runs onto the track, and all the officials try to stop him. But he comes in and he pushes past them, and he goes to his son, and he helps him round the course. Let me just show you a clip now. If you watch that when it happened, you remember that the crowd were all on their feet. Everyone in the stadium was standing and clapping and cheering. And when he crossed the finish line, he got a louder cheer than the one who came first. You know, I picture that's the way it is with us and in our running our Christian lives. Is that God sees us running our race, and it's not about whether we come in first or not. In fact, just to finish the race is to win in God's eyes. And we may stumble, we may fall, we may have our slip-ups, and we may have our moments where we just let ourselves down and others down. But so long as we get back up on our feet and we keep hobbling towards the finish line, we've won.
And I can imagine that God and all the hosts of heaven are on their feet watching us and cheering us as we go through the difficult times. Christianity isn't about having a smooth sailing. That's not what it's about. But we all have our struggles. We'll have our times of temptation. We'll have our times when we fall short. We'll have our times when we mess up. But so long as we keep on pushing towards the end. And see, we can talk about the focus and we can talk about the fight, but finally it's the finish that counts. And so long as we make it, that's all that's going to matter. You know, here in 2 Timothy chapter 4, Paul says, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but to all who long for his appearing. You know, God is just waiting to give us that crown of victory. But we've got to finish the race. We've got to press on. And you know, you saw in that clip there that how his father came down and helped him across the line. You know what? We need people in our lives to help us make it across the finish line. Hebrews 3 and verse 12 tells us that we've got to encourage one another daily to see to it, brothers, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God. The fact is that we need to watch out for each other. We need to look and see what's going on in each other's hearts. But we can't do that if we don't allow people to come into our lives. There's got to be an openness. There's got to be a willingness just to expose ourselves. The bottom line is, none of us likes to be exposed, do we? None of us likes to show weakness. We want to come across as if we've got it all together, but let's be honest, how many of us have got it completely right? How many of us have got our lives so down perfect that we don't need anyone to help us along the way? There's not a one. The only perfect person who ever lived was Jesus. All of us, we're a very poor second class. And that's why we have the body. Because though some of us may be strong in some areas, we'll have weaknesses in some parts. That's why I need my wife. Because without my wife, I would be a very mean kind of guy. You know, my son, I've been trying to get my son to do some exercise and get him in shape and trained up and everything else. And I took him out running with me. We used to go running around the park. And he would always be complaining, Dad, it hurts, my feet hurts. But I'm like, come on, son, you got to, no pain, no gain. He's like, no pain sounds better. But I'm like, you got to come with me. And we go running, and every day he'd be like, And after, this just went on for not a few weeks, this went on for about 6 months. And every time I took him out, I was like, come on, you got to push. So he's like, it really, really hurts. And so I thought, just to stop him from complaining, I said, Caleb, I'm going to take you to the doctors, and he'll tell you everything's fine. So I took him to the doctors. The doctor said, you know what? I think I probably need to refer him to a specialist. I said, really? He goes, yeah. He said, I think he may have Sievers disease. I said, what's that? He says, well, it's where the growth plates are not completely properly attached. When the child goes through adolescence and they grow in quite quickly, the ligaments can pull on this part of the bone. It can cause excruciating pain. I said, you don't say. He referred us to a consultant. The consultant confirmed the diagnosis. I said, what's the solution? He says, well, hopefully, he says, usually most people grow out of it in a couple of years, but in the meantime, you shouldn't do any strenuous exercise. I said, okay. In the car going back, my son was looking at me. I tell you what, Julie is the one who encouraged me to take him to the doctor. If without my wife, my poor kids, they'd be growing up crippled and twisted and angry and mean. I need my wife to help me to be a better dad. We need each other to help us to be better Christians. Because none of us can go it alone. The Christian life was never meant to be a solo event. It was always meant to be a team effort. We need those kinds of relationships. How close are you to the other brothers and sisters?
Do you have a regular time that you get with someone else on a regular basis just to talk about your life? Do you have someone who helps train you, disciple you, to mentor you? Are you open about your struggles and your weaknesses? See, at the end of the day, it's not about having a perfect race. It's not about looking good. It's about finishing. And at the end of the day, all that we really want is we just want to hear Jesus say those words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." But that's only going to happen if we finish the race. Just three things today. The first point is focus. We've got to understand that Jesus did it all. But because Jesus did it all, now we need to strive for purity and righteousness. We've got to have the right focus. Jesus died on the cross. Second thing is we've got to have fight. We cannot go into our Christian lives just waltzing through, expecting everything to fall into place. It doesn't work that way. There's effort involved. But that effort is worth it. You've got to fight. You've got to run in such a way as to get the prize. And finally, you've got to finish. And finish doesn't necessarily mean coming first. It just means that when you fall, you get back up again. When you stumble, when you trip, you don't lay there, but instead you stand up. There's a Chinese proverb, fall six times, get up seven. That needs to be our attitude. I want to close out with one final clip, and this was taken from a race about 3 years ago. And it's one of the top 10 collegiate races in the States, and Michigan State was being represented by a girl called Heather Dornadin. And as she was running, again, she was favorite to win her race, and this would have given her university the overall championship. But unfortunately, what happens is someone behind her catches her foot, and she trips and she falls. But as you're watching this, I want you to think of the verse in Micah chapter 7, verse 8, where the author tells us, "Though I have fallen, I will rise." Let's look at this now.